Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, and earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in history from Olivet College. A pioneer of assisted living communities, he formed American House in 1979. American House is the premier provider of affordable senior housing with 50-plus communities in the Midwest and Florida, caring for over 4,000 residents. A huge supporter of our veterans and wounded warriors, his name, Bob Gillette. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Bob Gillette, who in 1979 founded American House. Bob, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. Nice to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood?
Sure.
And your mom and your dad, please?
Yeah, thank you. I grew up actually in Rye, New York, came to Detroit. My dad worked for Hiram Walker and worked in Walkerville and lived in Grosse Pointe. And I got to tell you that I did struggle in high school with academia, and I frankly was very lucky to get into Olivet College. And they told me that if I tried, I probably would be able to graduate, but if I didn't, that I would be out. So it was a real incentive for me to study, and I was always very grateful to get my degree from them.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Mom?
Well, since my dad was a pilot in the Royal Air Force. He flew the Sopwith Camel. And he had a sign over his bench that said, if it runs, don't fix it. And one day I took the lawnmower apart, in the family lawnmower, pushed the lawnmower, but it had an engine, and I cleaned up the engine, and of course it never ran again. And from that point on, I decided that if it ran, not fix it. And that, frankly, is how I have set up American House. We do what we can to provide the best care we can and the best services. And frankly, it runs because the people who give the services are the ones that make it happen for us. And so my attitude, if it runs, don't fix it.
How was it? You went to work for Baxter Labs out of school.
Correct.
But then you got introduced to the world of nursing homes.
That's correct.
How did that happen?
That was very interesting. I was at Baxter, and Baxter had hired in those days MBAs out of Harvard. And actually, the MBAs were younger than me, and I probably was 28 or 27. And it was the advent of Medicare in 1965. So all of a sudden, the idea of where do old people go to live became a subject. And they came to me one day and said, we're going to be leaving Baxter. I said, what? They said, yeah. She said, we're going to go out and we've got a syndication and we're going to develop nursing homes. And I said to them, well, I think you're crazy. I mean, why would you leave this company? You were handpicked by the president. I'm not. Well, that may be, but we think this is the future. They said, would you like to join us? I said, oh, my God. I said, well, I don't know. I mean, you've got more to lose than me. What the heck? So I did. And the irony is that at the end of 1 year, we went out of business. And the reason for it was it was a very complicated business. It was regulated. And you shouldn't be experimenting on something like that without the proper knowledge. So the company dissolved, and I stayed in. And I really didn't have a choice because I had left the medical field. I'm now 30 years old. I can't no longer a kid. And I'm thinking to myself, I got to make a go of this nursing home business. And so I did, and I stayed in Detroit. And over the years, built with partners a very nice retirement home in Michigan. And then we built an assisted living facility, a large assisted living facility next to it. And what happened is that I learned that people needed more than just a licensed, and by the way, this I said assisted living, I should have said a home for the aged. The words assisted living did not come in until later. These were licensed homes for the aged. And the fallacy to them was that two people shared one bath, that there wasn't the kind of privacy that they thought they needed. And one shoe fit all. In other words, you had to take a medical program whether you needed it or not. And I thought to myself, this isn't really right. And so there was a fellow that I knew that had a building that really wasn't doing well. His name was Jack Feldman. He was a dentist. He lived in Bloomfield. And I talked to him one day, and he says, would you like to buy my building from me? And I said, yes, I would. And he said, well, you know, I'm going to make it real easy for you. Almost a dollar down and a dollar when I catch you. And that's how I got started in 1979. It's in Westland. Over the years, I've, you know, taken very, very good care of it. And you would never know today if you walked into it that the building is 50 years old. It has nothing but matured and gotten better with time.
Your mission these last 37 years has been providing high-quality housing for seniors at a price affordable for retirees and their families. Bob Gillett, tell us about American House.
Well, I sort of went into the background of American House. From those days, it has grown. It really had three levels of growth. The first 10 years was pretty much me. And I had a lady with me from the very beginning by the name of Barbara Barrow. So she was also from the nursing home industry, and she has been at my side almost the whole time. And then my son joined me. And then a gentleman by the name of Joe Schwartz joined me. And Joe came to me. So the first 10 years was Bob and Barbara, and I think my son got involved. And one of the things that I did do is I did convert four elementary schools during my period of time and turned them into retirement homes. They're all up and operating today. They all had extra lands. I've put villas around them. And so I really did this without the kind of skills that it really takes to do it. But fact is that they did get done. Maybe wasn't pretty, but they're up, they're operating, and they are models today.
We're talking to Bob Gillett. If you want to learn more, www.americanhouse.com. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Bob Gillett, who's considered one of assisted living's pioneers.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
Joe Schwartz of the Schwartz clan got involved. Dale got involved. Today, 4,000 residents, a staff of 1,500 people, 50-plus homes. Bob, tell us about the job these 15,000 teammates do every day.
Wow. That's a very interesting question. If I said to you, who is the most important person in the building that has the greatest contact with the residents, who do you think that might be?
The nurses.
Guess again. I don't want to put you on the spot. It's the same at Disney. It is the housekeeper. It is the person that is with them the most, has the most involvement with the resident because they're with them all the time. And so if you're trying to run a retirement home, you can't do it if the people that are taking care of the residents aren't happy with themselves and they're not happy with their jobs. And so you start with them. The maintenance man is also extremely important. I mean, these people hang my pictures, do this, do the other. If they don't like doing these things, they probably should find something else to do. And you can go right up the same chain to the people who provide the food and everything else. And I'm not taking it away from one second for the management staff of the building and or the people that provide the activities. But that's what we do. We provide all the support services in an apartment-like setting, but what we don't do is provide medical care to any of our residents. So that is that we use an outside agency. In this case, it happens to be the medical team that takes care of the medications. And by the way, this thing has gotten extremely sophisticated over the last 10 years, the last 5 years. It's now really, it's almost unbelievable how sophisticated this whole thing has gotten.
The past 37 years, being around assisted living and the people, the residents, what has that taught you, Bob Gillette?
What has that taught me? You know, I look at these people as almost my family. I mean, I really do. I don't know what else to tell you. I've told you the keys to what we do. If you have happy employees, you're going to have happy residents. If it's affordable, you're going to have happy residents. If you truly care about what you're doing, you're going to have happy. It's a very simple formula. And I guess I get now a tremendous amount of personal satisfaction, not by the mechanics of the business, but just seeing the end product.
The fourth commandment, honor your mother and your father.
Right.
When I was a teenager, my mom's mom, Grandma Klausner from Slovakia, had a stroke. She moved in with us.
Mm-hmm.
And Mom and Dad and us took care of her.
Correct.
And we were the physical rehab people, etc. That's how it was.
Right.
Today, so many of us baby boomers, we just drop off Mom and Dad at your front door and we're out of there.
Life is more complicated today maybe than when you grew up. I will speak about my mother, who lived in American House. So in those days, my mother loved to play bridge, and she would always have a foursome, and she was at the one we have in Rochester Hills. And so when there wasn't a fourth, she would call me, and I would go out, and I would be the fourth. My mother lived to be 86. She died in my home, but she thoroughly enjoyed those years of her life because she had a socialization, she had a care component, and you know, I was very, very happy with how this all took place and how she lived out her life. And she could have stayed with me, but that wasn't really, was that she needed to be around other people her own age. And so it works both ways.
If there's a baby boomer out there tonight that
yes.
has dropped off their parents
right.
at a American House or any assisted
right.
living, and
right.
I'm just too busy to get there.
Right.
What would you say to that baby boomer?
Well, let me tell you what, you know, not all people that need to be in an American House, that's sort of the problem that we have today. American House serves a very basic need, which is, you know, assistance when you need it in housing. The issue is even where does this all go by trying to keep people in their own homes? And so, not to get off the subject, but we're now working on how to try to keep people in their own homes. And I don't want to get off the subject of American House and the veterans and all the other things. But if you're really to look at the big picture and somehow come around to try to answer your thing, the answer's got to be in not institutionalizing everybody, but trying to figure out how through technology and thinking smart, you can try to bring services into their homes. And then when they really do need to be in these kind of settings, we would be ready for them.
For the last X number of years, you've fallen in love with our veterans and our wounded warriors. They're now your life's mission, Bob Gillette.
It is now.
Why have you fallen so much for veterans and wounded warriors?
Oh, that's an interesting question, Jack. In 2009, I'm sitting at my desk. And a guy by the name of Keith Famey calls me and says, "Hey, Bob, I'm doing a story on Detroit, the Greatest Generation. I understand you got some seniors. We're doing a presentation at the Baldwin House. Do you think you could bring a few over?" I said, "Keith, well, by the way, you know, you have to pay for them." I said, "I got that, Keith. Not a problem." So I said, "Sure." So we brought over three or four van loads. A total of 45 residents came that night to the towns. And when they got off the bus, there was a greeting guard there. There was a color guard. There was a van that was played the bagpipes. They were saluted when they came off. They sat down, and they had dinner. And then a guy by the name of John Papa George, who happened to be a West Point graduate, did roll call. And he called out each of their names and their serial numbers and their rank. And they got up and they saluted him. Well, the next day, I get the phone rings off the hook. And they say to me, do you know what you just did last night? I said, nothing. I didn't do anything. They said, that's not true. These men haven't talked for years. And they certainly haven't talked about that. They haven't stopped talking since they got back. And so from that point on, we started honoring our veterans on every Veterans Day and every event that took place after that. The part that I just to carry it one step further, Keith then the next day calls me too, and he says, oh, by the way, Bob, I forgot to mention it to you, but he said, you know, we're doing a documentary, and I mean, I told you that, but we don't have the funds to go over and film Lieutenant Barr, who was the second wave on Utah Beach. I said, really? Yeah. He says, we were thinking maybe you might want to contribute to that because it would be the final part of our documentary called The Greatest Generation. I thought for a second, and I said, you know something? How many have to go? He says, well, there's going to be 7 of us. I said, well, if you make it 9, I'll do it. And so Jerry and I accompanied them on the trip to Normandy and the documentary of this thing. When we got back, the DVD was produced, and we had it at the opening on at the Fox Theater. As a matter of fact, Paul W. was our MC. He stole the show that night. I mean, he didn't steal the show. He was marvelous at his commentary. But the place was filled, and it was filled with our veterans and their families. So the veterans that I was talking about earlier all came to the Fox Theater that night. I can tell you the seats that we set aside was 400. So either 400 of our veterans or their families were there that night to see this documentary. And they weren't necessarily in the documentary. They just knew it. They were not in the documentary. The one person that you would know that was in the documentary was Sonny Elliott. And Sonny Elliott was a pilot and flew the B-24 over Germany and was shot down and went into a concentration camp. But he was one of those people that was part of this documentary. And so ever since then, I've been involved in it. And it's evolved into, now we're involved with Chapter 154 of the American Veterans, Vietnam Veterans Association. Would they do what they work with us on every Veterans Day, on every holiday? So it isn't me. It's a whole group of people that are committed to honoring our veterans.
We're talking to Bob Gillette. When we come back, we're going to ask him about our wounded warriors from Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula. We're with Bob Gillette, who has a huge heart for our veterans and our wounded warriors. Let's go to wounded warriors. You got involved a few years ago because of a man named David Van Sleet.
Correct.
With wounded warriors.
That's absolutely correct.
Tell us what happened.
So David Van Sleet, going back to the story I told you, when these veterans came back, they went to the VA hospital. At the VA hospital, they had to be fitted for their prosthesis. The average age of these young men probably was 23 or 24, maybe 25 tops. So David fixed their prosthesis, and most of these young men were all high school. There was no college. These were all enlisted men. Many of them were very involved in sports, and they didn't really want to give up their sports life. And so there was a camp in Arizona that the government paid for, that if you went out there, they would teach you to be able to play softball with your prosthesis, which in many cases are blades on their legs or on their arms. But whatever it is, it's a unique way to it's most difficult to accomplish. And so one by one, these young men went out there. And then one of them happened to live in Bonita Springs, who I got to know extremely well. So I got to know David very well. And David says to me one day, hey, listen, we're having a fundraiser for the Amputee Wounded Warriors, and my parents are putting it on at the club across the street from you. Do you think you would like to come over, and you and Jerry would like to come over and be part of it? I said, well, I'd love to. So I go over there, and the one man gets up and talks, and he has no legs. And he gave the most eloquent explanation of his love for this country and his gratitude. And so I got to spend time with him and in different games. I would sit down with him. And one of the things that happened, he needed some help getting into a college. A group of us got together and made sure the right things were closed. And that young man today is now a great student at Florida Gulf Coast University. The other young man who's coming to Detroit is a guy, a fellow by the name of Matt Kinsey. Matt Kinsey was fortunate. He didn't lose both legs. He just lost one leg and he lost his foot. And so Matt gets up, and each of these fellows at this first meeting get up and they talk. And Matt says, he tells a little bit about his story. He says, well, you know, I was over there and then the same thing. I get off and IUD. And all, by the way, all these men that are coming to Detroit all tell Bell's basically the same story. I mean, what I'm telling you about these two is indicative of the team. And a mine goes off, and I believe they all would say to you they lost blood and they were unconscious. So he comes to, there's an emergency hospital, and he comes to at the hospital, and the doctor looks at him, puts his hand on his chest, and he says, soldier, he says, you know, you're going to be all right. You're going to have to, you've lost your part of your leg, you're going to be taken care of, you're going to go here, and you're going to wind up, but he says, you're okay. And so Matt looks at him, and he says, hey, doc, he grabs his private parts, and he says, are they okay? And the doctor said, yes, son, you're going to be just fine.
These 18 play softball.
Yep.
And in September, they're coming to Detroit.
Yes.
First, on September 9th.
Correct.
At the Birmingham Country Club at 4 p.m., you're going to have a press conference.
Correct.
But then they're going to play a couple games on September 10th at Jimmy John's Field in Utica.
Correct.
Andy Appleby's fabulous Absolutely. Minor league park at 1 p.m.
Yes, sir.
That's September 10th. 1 p.m., Jimmy John's, to commemorate the 15th anniversary of 9/11.
Correct.
So with that little preface, tell us one or two more stories about these 18 special warriors. And a year ago, Louisville Slugger started sponsoring them, so they're now known as the Louisville Slugger Warriors.
That's correct, and I'm also their sponsor, so they've asked me to be there, and because it doesn't cover all their costs. So I am connected with them to a degree also. What happened is they got older, and they needed to work. They had families, and they couldn't afford to keep taking these trips around the country playing other teams. They got to be too old. Louisville Slugger got word of it and said, wait a minute, we can get you so that you play better teams, and we can make sure that there's going to be more resources for this, and we can make it easy for them to travel and to get around. And so David came to me and he said, do you have any problem with that? I said, no, not at all. He said, well, would you stay on as a sponsor? I said, certainly. So they're coming to Detroit basically to say thank you for our sponsorship. And in fact, are thoroughly looking forward to the game. And the irony of this particular event is that it is on the 15th anniversary of 9/11. So David Sleek called me about 6 weeks ago. He said, Bob, are you aware of the fact that this is the 15th anniversary of 9/11? I said, well, I am, but I never really gave it a lot of thought. He said, you know, my boys would like to talk about their experiences when they're here. Do you think you can make that happen for them? I said, absolutely. He said, you know, they really would have a lot to say about the war, about where they are, who they are. And so I said, well, why don't we have that press conference for them? But the other thing is that they're going to be here for the whole time. And so if anybody wants to meet with those young men, including on Veterans Day itself, I mean, on 9/11 itself, they are available. And they're free to talk to them while they're here.
802-772-7232. 802-772-7232. David Van Sleet. The game will be on September 10th, Jimmy John's Field at 1 p.m. 10 years ago, Bob, I was honored to go to Walter Reed one day with a Brigadier General, Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
With a lot of stars.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked into 24 different rooms.
Mm-hmm.
To meet one-on-one with these wounded vets.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, they were 21, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that had all their limbs had one dream, one desire.
Hmm.
Brigadier General, when we went over, my team was 24. We're now down to 19 with me here.
Mm-hmm.
I got to get back to my team.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, the ones that were missing limbs all had one goal, one desire.
Mm-hmm.
Brigadier General, my team's deployment ends on November 18th.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be at Lansdorf Air Force Base in West Germany on the tarmac,
mm-hmm.
waiting, saluting my teammates
mm-hmm.
when they come back.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that so?
I think it's instilled in them from the day they join. I mean, it's just part of the creed. I can tell you this, that the monument that we have in Florida is of two men in battle coming off the field with two soldiers carrying the third off the field with a color photo, and it's entitled No Man Left Behind. I mean, that's the creed. That's what they're taught. That's what they're told. That's how they live their life. These guys are the same way. This is therapy for them. I'll just add one more thing just to change the subject just slightly. But Walter Reed today is now more involved in post-traumatic brain syndrome than they are in amputees. The need for this does not exist anymore. This is a past part of our military history. So the section that does the amputees is probably not in use. But the section that now is in tremendous use is the caring for the veterans who are suffering from the syndrome from war.
When we come back, we'll ask Bob about post-traumatic brain injuries. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Bob Gillette, who formed American House in 1979 in Westland, Michigan. American House is the premier provider of affordable senior living with 50-plus communities in the Midwest and Florida, caring for over 4,000 residents. Bob, the last segment we ended with the Walter Reed now being focused on
Correct.
The post-traumatic brain injuries.
Correct.
And of that, we're watching 22 of America's best, these veterans,
Correct.
Commit suicide a day.
Right.
Talk about that, please.
Well, you're talking about post-traumatic brain syndrome, is that correct?
Yes.
It's a multifaceted conversation. I know we've got these three veterans that are coming to Detroit who are going to be part of a documentary that Keith is doing on just this very subject, and it's called Death Is Not the Answer. That's why they're going to be in Detroit on the 16th. They're being filmed here. They're going to be whatever. I'm not privy to the bulk of it, but what I can tell you is that it's a much bigger issue today than it's ever been. And there is an organization that is addressing it and is available to veterans who have the need. And I'm going to give you the name of it right now. It's called Homebase, and they're located in Boston. And the connection to it is this, that it ties right into Walter Reed. When the Boston Red Sox won their championship a couple of years ago, they were in D.C. And while they were there, they said, we would like to go over and visit the patients at Walter Reed. So they went over, and the plane was supposed to leave at a certain time. They never made the plane. It was a chartered plane. And they stayed there with the people, and they were taken by this epidemic of veterans in Walter Reed suffering from brain syndrome and brain damage. And so they went back to now this is the Boston Red Sox. They then went to Mass General I said, Mass General, you realize what's going on in our country, that there's this problem? And so these two people, these two large organizations, put together a group called Home Base. And Home Base raises money to give to a veteran to go to Mass General, all expenses paid, for 10 days to go through the treatment of post-traumatic brain syndrome. Now, the reason I know it is that there's a gentleman, a general, again, that we talked about. His name is Ken Franks. And Ken Franks has taken upon himself in Florida to raise money for this organization called Home Base. I can tell you that I have not been very active in it, but I'm active in it, and I attend their meetings whenever they have them.
Bob alluded to Keith Famey,
yep,
our 11-time Emmy Award-winning producer of documentaries, and his newest one coming out this fall is, as Bob said, Death is Not the Answer.
Correct.
About suicide. And if you want to learn more, www.deathisnottheanswer.com. Bob Gillette, if there is a listener tonight who's a veteran, and he said, Bob Gillette, I've never told or shared my war experiences mm-hmm. with anyone,
right.
Not even my family members.
That's correct.
What would you say to him?
Oh, my God. It happens all the time. I was in Bonita Springs this winter when a man came in a wheelchair. And they said he was a veteran. And so I was standing there, and I went over and I talked to him, and I said, oh, wonderful. Where did you serve? And where were you? The man started crying. I said, what in the world are you crying about? He said, the granddaughter said, no one's ever asked them before. I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, you know, we're going to change that for you. That man was honored by our local veterans. He was honored on Veterans Day. I will tell you that he's no longer alive. But we added years to his life by the simple question, where did you serve and what did you do? And that is, my dad never talked about his life in the war either, if you want to know the truth. And he was shot down in a biplane. And, you know, maybe I got a little bit out of him. For whatever reason, it's kept inside. I don't know. I don't think it's healthy. But again, this is a personal issue. I think the more you talk about things like this, the better off you're going to be. But that's just my opinion.
If there's a wife tonight or a son or daughter
yeah.
that said, Dad's never talked.
Yeah.
Bob Gillette, how do I get Dad to talk about the war experiences? What would you say to that wife, son or daughter?
Dad, where did you serve? What did you do? Very simple. Where did you serve and what did you do? That's all I've ever asked.
The patriotism that these vets have is unbelievable.
It is.
Why?
Because they've been through so much together that it is a team effort, that it's not any one person, that the creed that the Marines take, and I think most of them take, it's one for all for one. I mean, they're there, you know, it's not something that we normally find in civilian life. It's something that is taught to them and graduated to them, and their lives depended on it. And, you know, I think that's the common thread.
Bob Gillette, you were one of the pioneers of assisted living.
Yes.
That's a phenomenal achievement, what you've done at American House, you and your team.
Yes.
Over 37 years. And now you get this new mission, this new passion. And you've said, looking back over my career, you say, I took a lot of risk and gambled with everything.
Yeah. Well, remember I went back, I told you I converted 4 elementary schools? If you think that's a precise science, you know, it's not. I didn't know what I was doing. And I knew I had a mission. And so, you know, I actually did my own performance in those days. There was no accountant. It was me. And nobody really challenged it in those days. But I can tell you that one of the reasons to challenge it was that I signed personally on every note. So you can do whatever you want, but, you know, you have to gamble. And each one is a gamble. Now, if you are wrong, you're going to have a problem. And I wasn't wrong, so it happened to work out very well. But that's the risk that you take in this type of a thing.
What role has faith played in your journey?
Well, I'm a faith-based person. You know, I go to church every Sunday. I say my prayers, and I certainly give thanks to God for what I've been able to accomplish and the family and the friends that I have. I can tell you that. I do it on either a daily or a weekly basis. So I always give thanks to God for allowing me to do these things.
You've watched an awful lot of people pass to eternity.
Yes.
And hopefully they hear the greatest words anyone can ever hear.
Right.
Well done, good and faithful servant.
Right.
If there's some listeners tonight who has a parent near the end, what advice would you give those listeners about their parent passing?
Well, I mean, I've experienced it. I've been around it all my life. I mean, what else can you say besides love and admiration and comfort? I mean, I don't know what else you do. As I said to you, my mother died at my own home. She did not die at American House. I brought her home with 24-hour care. But her happiest days was not necessarily living with me, but it was living with other people. But when it got to the point where it was terminal and it wasn't, death was inevitable, then I think that they belong with family and or whatever. And I know my mother died a very peaceful death because I was there when it happened.
As our time winds down together this evening, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, that's a very broad question, Jack. I would say that if there are young people today in school that are looking for a career, even though gerontology is not household word, it certainly is an industry that is going to continue to be a major player in the years to come. I can tell you that the technology that's coming in this industry, for those that are engineers or technicians, is going to be incredible, because all of these people cannot wind up coming to an American House or an assisted living facility as we get older. And so somewhere here, someone's got to figure out, how do we keep them in their own home? How do we provide the services that we need without the cost associated with assisted living, memory care, and as they need it, there's not going to be a problem. But the fact is that the future for this thing is going to be, I think, phenomenal.
Bob Gillette, as you've said, I took a lot of risk and gambled with everything, and the world is better for it. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, sir.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rizzullo. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall. Believe in me.